Oh, hello, Katie.
What? Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to. I'm sick right now, so I made me a hot toddy, and by a hot toddy, I just mean bourbon.
Sounds awfully delightful right about now, actually.
I mean, both are great. I had one last night, and it was like probably the best thing. I couldn't taste a lot of it, but I felt great.
A hot toddy would actually do me wonders right now. I sound like two giant piles of hot garbage rubbing up against each other.
I sound like the personification of a cigarette.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, I just walk like this.
God.
Yeah. So that's been fun. I
Great.
can't taste anything. It's lovely, you know?
Yeah, I have a quick story for you guys, though.
Okay.
Okay.
I got home from work last night and it was really dark. As I pulled into the parking lot of my apartment complex, my headlights flashed across something furry.
A dog?
And I was like, I'm pretty sure I just saw two Scotty dogs run away from the dumpster and it's raining. So I guess I'm gonna have to take two Scotty dogs into my apartment tonight. Well, I backed up and shone my headlights where they ran. It was not two Scotty dogs.
Was it three?
Nope. Do you want to know what it was, though?
What?
Raccoons.
Any guesses?
Raccoons.
A chupacabra.
If it was a chupacabra, I wouldn't be alive. But Katie Beth is right. It was raccoons.
Please tell me you have two raccoons in your bathtub right now.
There were four raccoons.
Please tell me you have four raccoons in your bathtub right now, Ashley. Please.
Well, I called my brother. Well, first I called my mom and I told her how cute they were, but then I called my brother and I said, Aaron, how dangerous are raccoons? And he goes, they can get pretty aggressive, Ashley. I was like, okay, so what I'm hearing is that you're telling me not to get out of my car and go hug them and play with their grabby hands. And he said, yes, you heard correctly. And I said, but they're so cute, though.
But and then no, it's just like too late. I'm already heading over there.
And so I sat in my car on the phone with my brother for the next 10 minutes, telling him how I was watching a family of four raccoons make raccoon ladders of themselves to help their friends into the dumpster. And then one of them climbed the.
It's a raccoon heist.
It was, honestly. And then one of them climbed the fence pole outside of the, like, that surrounds the dumpster. And he did parkour into the dumpster.
What?
Yeah. Honestly, it was the most exciting thing that's ever happened to me. I've never seen raccoons before in my life, only in videos and pictures. And then I got to see four of them at once.
Yeah.
And it was
You
incredible.
haven't seen raccoons before this?
No, listen, I've just never lived anywhere that had raccoons. And then it was honestly the best. They all stopped and stared at me at one point. And their little
They're
band
trying to get
hat.
your money. They're
They
like,
could
can
have
we
had
steal
it.
from her?
They already had my heart, so they could have had my money.
That's how they get it, you know?
I know. And then I think one of them was actually an albino because he didn't have any gray fur. So I think I had a very special raccoon sighting the other night.
Oh, you should have kept it.
I wanted to, but
What if
my
it's
brother.
white because it what if it what if it's albino because it just ate marshmallows?
I mean, that sounds scientific to me, but I don't know.
Yeah. Listen, I gotta be a fan theater, so I don't know a lot. I took astronomy, so you know, I can find the Little Dipper and the Big Dipper and the North Star. That's all I remember.
Wow.
I know that Subaru is a constellation and it's made up of seven stars. Boom.
A Subaru?
Yeah, so Subaru, like the car brand, it's actually named after a constellation
I
and it's
didn't
made up
realize.
of seven stars. It's also known as the Seven Sisters.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Astronomy facts with Sally.
Boom.
This is Sally's Astronomy Corner.
Listen. Well,
welcome to Legendary Lasses. I'm Ashley.
I'm KB.
And I'm Sally.
And today we're going to be talking... Listen, y'all hit me with some pretty heavy, creepy stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like... Yeah, the last two episodes were super creepy.
They weren't creepy. I thought they were like... Mine was like macabre, but it wasn't creepy.
Okay, I'm going to say dark.
Yeah, I mean, it was about a cult, so yeah.
Is that a better term for it? So this week I was like, we're not going to do something heavy. We're going to do something a little bit light.
Is this going to be about me because it's my birthday?
No, sorry.
Whatever.
I couldn't do enough research on you.
I'm checking out right now.
No, don't check out. This is very interesting.
Okay. Better convince me.
Okay. We're going to surprise go to a Victorian lady.
Okay.
I'm shocked.
I know you are.
Still don't have my attention. I'm like, what's that show? Shark Tank? That's who I am. I'm on that panel. Might as well be Mark Cuban right there. Boom.
Listen.
You guys sell me. Ashley Marie.
It's going to be really good. And there is a slightly creepy portion of this.
Well, get to it, Ashley. Time is money, and I don't have any.
Okay. So today we're going to talk about Elizabeth Siddall or Siddall.
Uh huh.
I've never heard anyone say her name, but her last name is spelled S I D D A L L. Siddall?
Siddall. I think that sounds about right. Yeah.
Okay, so she was born on the 25th of July, 1829, at the family home located on 7 Charles Street, Hatton Garden, which is in London. Her parents, Charles Crook Siddall and Elizabeth Eleanor Evans, which is like, what a name.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Eleanor Evans.
That's a lot of E's. Was she just called E, like E cubed?
Hey, E cubed, come here.
Come on.
Both of her parents were of English and Welsh descent.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles owned a cutlery making business. A cutlery making business, yeah.
Okay.
However, around 1831, the family moved to the borough of Southwark in South London.
Mm-hmm.
And this may mean that the business was going under or there was a big shift in their financial situation in some other way, as Southwark is a little less desirable area to live in. It's not the worst place at the time, but it's certainly a different sort of lifestyle than Hatton Garden would have been. So she grew up in a working class family, and here in Southwark, the rest of the Siddall siblings would be born. So she has a sister, Lydia, who she would be particularly close with growing up. Mary, Clara, James, and Henry. I'm sorry.
Very unique names.
Very English, isn't it?
True.
Now, no historical records have been found if Elizabeth actually attended a school, but we do know she could write and read, and most assume that she probably learned this just from her parents.
Mm-hmm.
After discovering a poem by Tennyson at a young age, Elizabeth developed a love of poetry that inspired her to start writing her own and would carry out throughout her adulthood. Beyond that, we don't know much about her early life, but we do know that at age 20, Elizabeth is working at a dressmaker's and millinery shop in Cranbourne Alley, and she's also interested in art, and at this time she begins sketching and making drawings. In 1849, at 20 years old, Elizabeth shows her drawings to Walter Deverell's father. And Walter Deverell is an English painter who was actually born in the U.S. And he's part of the pre-Raphaelite art period.
Okay.
So after showing the drawings to Mr. Deverell, he actually suggests that Elizabeth should work as a model for Walter and was quickly employed by Walter. Through this employment, Elizabeth would be introduced to other artists in the pre-Raphaelite movement. Though later and even today, what would be touted about the work is her beauty. They actually chose her as a model for her plainness.
Hmm.
Which I think is interesting to see kind of how ideas of beauty change or perhaps it's just their rendition of her plainness being beautiful. I'm not exactly sure.
Well, that does make sense, because I feel like today beauty standards are more just like, I want to be flawlessly bland.
Do you think?
Well, like, for the most part, yeah, they're like, I want to be completely matte, except, like, in these three areas, my cheekbones, my tip of the nose, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know, if I would call that bland, though. I feel like
people it's literally flawless. Like, I mean, it's just
that is true.
You know what I mean? I mean, there are, like,
they do want that, like, painting-esque feature of, like, being completely poreless.
Yeah.
But, yeah, interesting. I didn't think about that, Sally. Mm-hmm. Well, at the time of being hired as a model for Walter.
Sorry.
You're good. At the time of being hired as a model for Walter, he's actually working on a large oil painting depicting a scene from Twelfth Night. And it features the characters Orsino, Festi, and Viola as Cesario. Much like the rest of the Pre-Raphaelite artists, Walter is using figures and form from life rather than using the kind of antiquated, idealized form. So they're more interesting figures of people, I guess. This painting actually features him as Orsino, Dante Rossetti, who is another artist who will become very important to our story in just a moment. He is portraying Festi in the painting. And then we have Elizabeth as Viola Cesario. This same year, in 1849, Sydal met Dante Rossetti, and this was the beginning of quite a romance for the both of them. Throughout most of his years,
this is the beginning of the forest fire.
a little bit. So throughout most of his youth, Rossetti would consider Elizabeth to be his muse, and she was the primary model used for most of his work. By 1851, he's painting her almost to the exclusion of other models. Also, at some point, he stops her modeling for other Pre-Raphaelite artists. The number of drawings and paintings of her by Rossetti alone is said to be in the thousands.
Holy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And moving into the next year, 1852, is a big year for Elizabeth in terms of looking back at her life from now. At this time, Elizabeth would begin to study art with Rossetti. And she would paint a self-portrait during this time, which differs greatly from their kind of style. But she does still kind of use the same layout that they do, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
She would also produce many sketches, drawings, and watercolors. In her art, she does depict Arthurian legends and other fantastical, idealized medieval scenes. 5 years later, her work would actually be exhibited with other Pre-Raphaelite artists, which I was going to talk about later, but I think this is probably a good time to do it now. This kind of movement is sometimes referred to as the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood.
Okay.
So I think it's incredible that 5 years after she starts kind of studying with these bigger artists, she's having her own work exhibited with them.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever heard of her before?
No.
No.
Okay. We're going to get to a point in this story where I think you guys are going to be like, what? And be like, I know her.
Oh, no.
So.
Well, you're like, her parents started a cutlery company, and that sounds very familiar to me. I don't know why.
Okay. Well, staying in 1852, since it's a big year for her, this is also the year that Elizabeth moved into Chatham Place with Rossetti and would live with him until her death. They are not married at the time.
Okay.
Scandalous.
Which is very scandalous for Victorian society.
Yeah.
This is also where the bulk of Rossetti's sketches and drawings of Elizabeth come from, and they contain very personal work of Elizabeth at home.
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
So, like, you're like, oh, it's scandalous at the time. I'm pretty sure her parents weren't very pleased about this, but, like, I wonder how that conversation went. Were they like, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes the baby in the baby carriage?
I think that'd be more of Rossetti's parents. We'll talk a little bit about that drama in a little bit.
Oh, never dear. Mind. You didn't get my little like schoolyard taunt. Did y'all ever do that?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
But literally, that Rossetti's parents. So it's very, sorry. Oh yeah. So it's Elizabeth about the house mostly in his sketches. There's some really nice ink drawings that Rossetti makes of like Elizabeth painting and like just doing figure studies of her. This guy looks at his girlfriend a lot, which is a weird thing to say, but you know what I mean. I'm going to apologize now because I'm very sick and slightly delirious.
Actually, I think we all are.
Okay, good. So during this time, Elizabeth would also begin to write poetry again. And often her poetry contains darker themes of lost love or this idea of the impossibility of true love.
I feel that.
Yeah, I do too. I really like her poetry. Rossetti and his friend, Ford Maddox Brown, both supported Elizabeth in her writings and were pretty ardent fans of her work. And William Gaunt, who is a critic from kind of our time period, he died in the 1980s, but he wrote that Elizabeth's verses were as simple and moving as ancient ballads. Her drawings were as genuine in their medieval spirit as much more highly finished and competent work of the pre-Raphaelite art. Which I think is like really great praise for someone who haven't really heard of a lot.
Yeah.
So one of her poems, which is my personal favorite, is the one that Sally is going to read for us today.
And it's,
And it's called...
am I going to read it now?
Yeah. It's called Dead Love.
Yeah, it's called Dead Love. Okay.
So happy.
Wait, let me. All right. Oh, never weep for love that's dead, since love is seldom true, but changes his fashion from blue to red, from brightest red to blue. And love was born to an early death, and so is seldom true. Then harbor no smile on your bony face to win the deepest sigh. The fairest words on truest lips pass on and surely die. And you will stand alone, my dear, when wintry winds draw nigh. Sweet, never weep for what cannot be, for this God has not given. If the merest dream of love were true, then sweet, it would be in heaven. And this only earth, my dear, where true love is not given.
So.
How was that?
It was great. Well done, Sally.
Thank you.
So there's definitely a style to her work that is very much more, I'm going to say like troubadour balladeer from medieval times.
Yes.
I
could imagine like a lyre being played in the background.
Yeah. And it's kind of written in this way that it's almost like a character saying it.
Yes.
And it kind of reads almost like a Shakespearean speech.
Yeah.
So I really like her work. I'd like to know what you guys think of that poem.
It's sad.
It is very sad.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yep, I agree with it. Yep.
Sounds about right.
I don't know. I feel like I'm always battling within myself between like optimism and
the world is shit.
Yeah.
Love is a lie.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, because part of me is like, love exists. But then I'm also like, love is a battlefield. Heartache to heartache, we stand. No?
That's very good, Sally.
Listen, I should have been a singer.
You should have. But no, I think there is, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that because I feel like there's also something musical about her verses.
Yes.
And that it very could easily be a song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'd be really interesting to see someone write a musical about her using her poetry as the lyrics for the book.
Mm.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, this is also the year that Elizabeth would model for perhaps the most famous painting of her. And I think this is where you guys are going to be going like, oh my God. So here we go. This is actually the painting I first knew her from, and it's still my favorite after looking at all these pictures of her.
I'm so excited.
Sir John Everett Millais began working on what I would consider his masterpiece with Elizabeth in late 1851, but it was mostly done in 1852. It's of the drowning form of Ophelia from Shakespeare's Hamlet.
Oh, yes!
No way.
Do you all know the painting? Yes, we all know. Okay. There's a company. There's a company that makes a huge patch of it. You can put it on like a jean jacket.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd love to get a tapestry for my wall. I love this painting. I think it's beautiful.
That would, if you could get the right artist, that would make an amazing tattoo, but it would fade so terribly.
Oh yeah, it'd be really hard.
It would not last.
No.
But that'd be an amazing tapestry.
Yeah. So, actually, in order to pose properly for Millais, Elizabeth had to float in a bathtub full of water. And Millais painted daily and worked into the winter months.
Oh, shit.
During which time, oil lamps were put under the tub in order to keep the water warm for Elizabeth because she could be there for hours.
I thought she was so
Well, I'm pretty. Glad that, like, they're actually taking that into consideration, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah.
However,
did she get like pneumonia from this?
However, on one occasion, the lamps went out and the water began to turn icy.
Oh.
Absorbed in his work, the lamp went unnoticed by Millais, and Elizabeth did not complain about the temperature, assumedly probably not to disturb him.
Yeah.
After this day of work, Elizabeth became very ill with either what could be the worst cold ever or pneumonia.
It's Here's the thing. You distract him for a moment to relight the lamp so that you don't get pneumonia and set his painting back for however long you are sick for.
And you don't get pneumonia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like me and Ashley have been sick for whatever. We hate this.
But also at the same time, I don't know if she knows. I mean, at this time, I don't know in Victorian medical study, like if they know what pneumonia is and how it's caused.
True. Okay.
Right? She just thinks, oh, I'm going to be cold for a little bit and then I can sit by a fire. Right?
I guess.
It's a little hard to tell based on the records, though, what exactly she had. But holding Millais responsible for Elizabeth's illness, her father threatened Millais with legal action. Millais actually was like, yo, my bad, dude. I should have totally seen that. I'm going to pay all of her doctor's bills.
Yeah.
And then he did.
Don't even worry about it. He did. He paid it. He was good to his word. He paid all of her doctor bills, presumably also including any kind of medication she had to take, which will come back later. And the family considered the situation sorted.
What kind of medicine? Was she just on laudanum the whole time?
Ooh, we're going to take a break. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this romance between Elizabeth and Rossetti and the rest of her life.
Okay.
All right. My dogs are fighting.
Are you glad that I haven't burped this whole episode?
I'm so proud of you.
Look at me go.
Do you want to know a secret?
Did you burp?
I burped.
Look who's the Sally now.
Okay. Well, welcome back from break.
I threw myself a 10-second birthday party.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Thank you. Because this episode is going out on my birthday.
It is. Which is very exciting. What are we doing for your birthday?
I don't know. I'm going to work.
Okay. Also, I forgot to mention, this is the first episode since I'm technically a master.
Go you. Yeah. We should all celebrate. We should all celebrate all of this and Christmas and get tattoos. Just saying.
I mean, yeah. I'm down. Whatever.
KB, you in? I take that as a yes.
I take that as a yes.
I've got concerns, but
well, you wear sleeves or a cardigan.
I do like a good cardigan. What did you say?
Get it on your ankle.
I don't know. We'll see. I'll think on it.
Okay. So back to this romance between Elizabeth and Rossetti.
Rossetti spaghetti.
So after moving in together in 1852, the two reportedly became antisocial, spending all of their time with each other.
That sounds really weird.
Yeah. They even coined really cringy pet names, reportedly. One of them being Rossetti would call Elizabeth my dove or dove. And most of...
Is there anything more cringy than this? What else is there?
Honestly, I was cringing too hard. I didn't even put them in my script.
Because I was about to throw my phone at the fucking wall.
Yeah, I saved you.
They're in love.
God, no. So most of Rossetti's sketches, like I said, portrayed Elizabeth at home. But it's a further extent of portraying her as kind of a lady of leisure. Comfortably entertaining herself throughout the day with different sort of ladies' achievements, like painting or writing or stitching or lounging about.
That's my favorite achievement.
Yeah. He also began dropping the second L from Siddell's name. And some of this may be due to Elizabeth coming from a working class family and Rossetti not. He knew that his parents would not approve of them being together, and Elizabeth reportedly already received pretty harsh criticism from both of his sisters. So knowing that...
They're both just like standing in there and going, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes the baby and the baby cake.
Yeah, probably. So knowing that the family would not approve, this seemed to be a reason that Rossetti kept pushing off a legal ceremony for quite a while. However, on the 23rd of May, 1860, the two were married in the seaside town of Hastings at St. Clement's Church.
So they weren't married like in a Hastings, like the store.
No, the town of Hastings.
After 8 years of living together.
Yeah. At this ceremony, there were no family or friends present, but rather a couple of witnesses who they asked into the church who were just townspeople of Hastings.
And one was a ghost.
Probably.
They actually asked the ghost, hey, do you have some time between, you know, like 2 and 3? Can you just, you know, float over this way?
Oh, God.
He was like, yeah, I'm not doing anything else.
I think you're going to feel really bad here in a minute.
Oh, no.
So prior to their wedding, Elizabeth had suffered years of poor health. Frequently, they traveled to Paris and Nice to kind of get away, and it was more of a retreat for her to get better. But at the time of their wedding, she reportedly had to be carried to the church, despite it being a 5-minute walk from where they were staying.
Oh,
Many think that she suffered from tuberculosis. However, some historians believe an intestinal disorder was more likely considering her symptoms and lifestyle. But there are others who suggest that she may have actually been anorexic. There's also a fourth option, which is the most simple option, and it's what I consider to probably be the most sound explanation that would explain sort of her frailty and bouts of sickness. And it's the fact that Elizabeth had become addicted to laudanum and had been using it for years.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. For those who, I feel like we've talked about laudanum before on the show, but for those who don't know, laudanum is opium derivative. The opium crisis happening here in the States and elsewhere, it happened in the Victorian London as well.
And they blamed it on Chinese people.
They sure did. Reportedly, Elizabeth battled with severe bouts of depression, some of which consisted of somewhat paranoid thoughts that Rossetti was constantly on the lookout for a younger muse for his work. And that might actually be like a true thought, and Rossetti may have been gaslighting her for years, but it's kind of difficult to say. These bouts of depression and long periods of sickness made Elizabeth play a terrible cycle of addiction and gave her easy access to laudanum. In 1861, though, Elizabeth became pregnant with her and Rossetti's first child. However, this pregnancy resulted in the birth of a stillborn daughter. Significant loss sent Elizabeth spiraling into a case of severe postpartum depression. She would become pregnant for a second time in late 1861, but it too would end prematurely in tragedy. Y'all ready?
Oh, no.
In February of 1862, after having dinner with Elizabeth and their friend Algernon Charles Swinburne, Rossetti attended to his teaching duties at the Working Men's College. Arriving home from teaching, Rossetti found Elizabeth unconscious. Unable to revive her, he called for a doctor. This doctor claimed to be unable to revive her either, which resulted in Rossetti calling three more doctors to their home. A stomach pump was used. I'm about to cry. I don't know why. Okay. A stomach pump was used on Elizabeth's unconscious body, but to no avail. At 7:20 a.m. on the 11th of February, 1862, Elizabeth Siddall was declared dead due to an accidental overdose of laudanum.
Oh, no.
However, this is not where the drama ends for Elizabeth or Rossetti.
Hold on, how old was she when she passed?
She was born in 1829 and died in 1862. So she was... I can't do math. Somebody do math for me.
She's probably in her 40s.
29 to 59 would be 30. 33, yeah.
Okay, cool. Because I was like... She was what, five short, you know, 5 years over being 27. I was like, oh, she died of addiction, you know what I mean? So I was like, oh, 27 club, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, she was 33.
Okay.
Although her death was ruled accidental by the coroner, there were rumors that Rossetti found a suicide note with the words, "Please look after Harry," that was quote unquote pinned on the breast of her nightshirt. Harry was her younger brother who may have had a slight intellectual disability. After getting the doctors to attend to his wife, Rossetti, consumed with grief, he supposedly went to see Ford Maddox Brown, who is supposed to have instructed Rossetti to burn the found note as suicide was illegal, immoral, and would have brought enough scandal onto the family to ruin them.
Mm.
Not to mention it would have barred Elizabeth from receiving a Christian burial.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, this last story about the suicide note, it's kind of hard to say how much of that is true since it's all pretty much anecdotal evidence. But I think it does lead to a conversation about outside looks juxtaposed against inward trouble or thoughts. I mean, she's considered to be one of the best muses of painters, especially Rossetti. And she's also accomplished in her own right and has artistic value of her own paintings and her writings. And like I said, to have her work exhibited with this brotherhood, right? That's a huge achievement, I would think. I think she would have thought proudly of that. But yeah, I think there's something that, like, we have so many images of her and it's all about her beauty and... this kind of thing, but you know, she's obviously suffering at some extent. That I think probably went unnoticed by everyone. I'm not even sure if Rossetti knew a whole lot. But yeah, anyway, I mean, do you guys have anything you want to say about that?
I almost feel like, I mean, I hate to classify people into types or whatever, but she hits me in a lot of the same ways that, like, Sylvia Plath does.
Yeah.
Or Zelda Fitzgerald.
Which is interesting, because I think she looks a lot like Sylvia Plath.
Hmm.
Or Virginia Woolf.
Okay. Hmm.
Which I think is just very interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. No, she does kind of hit me in that same vein where there's this obviously artistic creativity. Genius might be a strong word. But you know what I mean.
Kind of ahead of their time.
Yeah, yeah. I think she has this fixation with like this medieval romanticized view of life, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting to think about that juxtaposed against Victorian time, because I think when we think about, you know, that kind of Arthurian legend, it's adventure and romance and chivalry and all of the good things that we think about medieval times, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at that...
Are we talking about medieval times or like the dinner and tournament, you know, where you can go and...
I mean, I guess sort of both. God, I want to go to medieval times. How come nobody ever takes me to medieval times?
Why can't you just take yourself?
I mean, I would, but I feel like it's awkward to go by myself and yell at the knights.
I mean, you can go. If you drink enough, you could justify it.
I mean, that's true. That's true, I guess. But yeah,
kind is that of what like, we should do for Christmas? We all go to medieval times.
We should do Christmas. That as a celebratory Sally's birthday Christmas party, me graduating.
But yeah. I kind of don't want to go to medieval times for my birthday. Because I'll be right there with like a 9-year-old celebrating their birthday. That would be fucking weird.
Yeah, but you're a lady who can look at knights battle each other.
Yeah, but I can't even see their butts. It's gonna be covered by a tunic.
But we could go see the horses. And maybe you can meet Maya the Falcon.
I'm allergic to horses.
Well, then don't touch the horses, but maybe we can meet Maya the Falcon.
Ashley, you know I'm going to touch the horses.
Well, then bring some Benadryl.
Shut up.
But anyway, getting back to it, I think that, like, there's sort of this, like, freedom aspect that I think we associate a little bit to idealized medieval time, partly due to like that adventuring, and then I think thinking about the Victorian times where it's very restrained and I don't know, like I think there's a weird liberating thing for her to kind of fixate on medieval period. Even though, like, she's kind of living outside of the Victorian culture in a way. Like, she's living with her artist boyfriend for 8 years before they're married.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have, like, a normal Victorian lady's job, but she's a model.
Yeah.
And Rossetti's rich, so she doesn't really even have to do that to work. She just...
Like, I think she was just probably, like, 120 years ahead of her time. Like, if she was, like, in the, like, the 60s.
Yeah.
She would have had it made in the shade with pink lemonade.
Oh, yeah. She would have been set, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, I think I don't know. I feel like I have this problem of finding historical figures that seem like underdogs in their time, but are just, like, born in the wrong period.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm very fascinated by those type of people, which is why I wanted to talk about Elizabeth. But anyway, do you guys get what I'm trying to say about her fixating on medieval time?
Yes.
Because I feel like I just ranted for a long time.
Well, it's almost that, what is that Owen Wilson movie?
Midnight in Paris.
Yes. Yeah.
That's my favorite movie.
I thought it was just called Wow.
Wow.
But yeah, people are so infatuated with other time, you know.
Yeah.
And I also find it interesting. I think It feels so almost modern to me because I think, like, now we kind of, I feel like we think that's sort of a modern thing that, you know, we question love and if it's real and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But really, that's been a thing that we've been doing for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it goes sort of hand in hand with that, like, romanticizing different times, because I can see how this Victorian lady would kind of romanticize that chivalrous, like, courtly love thing of medieval times.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to me. That it's always interesting to me when I look at something and go, people really haven't changed, have they?
No, like, they really haven't. Like, we're all pretty much the same throughout history. Like, what are we doing here? Why do we find other people to spend lives with?
Yeah. I think the clothes just change.
Yeah. Pretty much. Well, getting back to our story, Elizabeth was buried in Highgate Cemetery, and she's still buried there today. You can go see her grave, I think. But stricken with grief and wanting to express his eternal love for Elizabeth, Rossetti placed a notebook that contained the only copies of his love poetry into the casket with Elizabeth before it was sealed.
Wow.
Yeah. And a year after her death, Rossetti painted one more portrait of Elizabeth, and it was completing a series of portraits that he had done of her throughout their life together. That mm-hmm. features Elizabeth as Beatrice from Dante's Inferno.
Oh.
So this piece was a piece of Beatrice praying with portions of the Inferno behind her.
Hmm.
And I think this is slightly interesting when we think about the possible suicide aspect of her death.
Yeah.
And the fact that he may have been scared for her.
Yeah.
I feel like this might be a representation of that fear.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we don't know for sure. If it was or wasn't. But it's called Beata Beatrix. And it's very, very beautiful if you guys would like to go look at it.
Yeah.
So 6 years later, which is 7 years after her death, Rossetti is actually battling drug addiction himself, and the popularity of his work was on the decline. Mm. His literary agent, Charles Augustus Howell, who I will describe for you in a minute, persuaded Rossetti to let him exhume Elizabeth's casket to retrieve the notebook in order to publish new love poems and hopefully rekindle Rossetti's career. Rossetti's only wish is that no one would know about the exhumation. Ooh.
The exhumation.
Thank you. The exhumation. And that it be done at night when no one could see.
Oh, gosh.
He declined the invitation to be there for the exhumation. So this Charles Howell arranged the exhumation and some depictions, Lord help me, some descriptions of the event say a fire was lit to illuminate the work as they opened her coffin.
Mm-hmm.
According to Howell, even though she had been dead and buried for 7 years, there was no trace of decomposition. Perfectly preserved in her beauty, he accounted that her famous red hair had even continued to grow. He said it looked as if she was merely asleep. The notebook, however, was retrieved, and according to our source Charles, it was disinfected and dried by a physician. There are also mentions of a hole in the notebook that had been created by a worm eating its way through the notebook. Given this description of the notebook, it's hard to imagine there are no signs of decomposition to Elizabeth's body, but what good would it have done to tell Rossetti anything different of Elizabeth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to give you an idea of this Charles character, he is described as, quote, a base, treacherous, unscrupulous, and malignant fellow.
Oh, dear.
And Algernon Charles Swinburne described him as, quote, the vilest wretch I ever came across.
Wow.
He also reportedly faked Rossetti's sketches and sold them for his own profit. And he was supposedly found dead near a pub in Chelsea with his throat slit and a 10-shilling coin in his mouth. So that just kind of gives you an idea of the kind of person that we're dealing here. And the kind of person that Rossetti has as his literary agent.
Interesting.
But we do have to,
yeah,
we do have to remember that Rossetti is his client, and he is trying to get his client back on track. Upsetting him further wouldn't have proved financially beneficial for either of them. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is not a cruel play of Rossetti. I think this is merely, he sees it as beneficial for the both of them to let Rossetti think she's still beautiful. She's just as you remembered her.
Yeah.
Her bodily form is still intact, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But Rossetti did publish a collection of sonnets that year, and it was titled The House of Life. And in it was included, And in it was included the poem Without Her. And this poem, KB will read for us next.
Oh, dear. Okay. What of her glass without her? The blank gray, there where the pool is blind of the moon's face. Her dress without her? The tossed empty space of cloud rack whence the moon has passed away. Her paths without her? Day's appointed sway usurped by desolate night. Her pillowed place without her? Tears, ah me, for love's good grace and cold forgetfulness of night or day. What of the heart without her? Nay, poor heart, of thee what word remains ere speech be still? A wayfarer by barren ways and chill, steep ways and weary, without her thou art, where the long cloud, the long wood's counterpart, sheds doubled up darkness up the laboring hill.
So, I think we can tell that he was very upset by her passing.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And very much lost without her, I would say. Because I think we also have to remember, too, that she's pregnant at the time of her death.
Oh.
So she had her second pregnancy. So her first pregnancy that had the stillborn daughter was in 1861. She became pregnant later that year, like late 1861. And by February 1862 is when she died. So it's not only his wife that he's been with for over a decade now. It's also their second child is gone from him as well. After quick succession of losing their first child. So he's got a lot of grief going on with him. That is pretty much where their story ends, though. As far as her legacy goes, I would say pretty much as everyone has seen Elizabeth's face at some point, whether they knew it was her or not. There have also been many movies and television shows depicting Elizabeth and Rossetti's relationship. I tried to find one to watch today, and I could not for the life of me find it. But you can find a list online. And they look interesting. There are also many novels that feature Elizabeth as a character. I think the most intriguing one is called Hide Me Among the Graves by Tim Powers. It was published in 2012. Now, I haven't read this yet. It quickly made it to my to-read list, though. because it features Elizabeth as the victim of vampire John Polidori, which some of you may recognize from our Mary Shelley episode.
Wait. So, in this book, John Polidori himself is a vampire?
Yes, ma'am.
What?
And victimized Elizabeth?
Yes, ma'am, because surprise for you, John Polidori is actually Dante Rossetti's uncle.
What?
Yeah.
This story gets more and more wild.
Yeah. So in also, real life, Dante Rossetti's uncle is John Polidori, who was there at the writing of Frankenstein, wrote the vampire. Oh, yeah. They also have like other famous like cousins and stuff too. Like this is a very well renowned family at the time.
Oh goodness.
Yeah.
Also said she was buried in Highgate Cemetery. So there's did y'all listen to the last podcast episode about the vampire of Highgate or whatever?
Yes.
I don't think I've ever listened to that actually.
Yeah, so it's really about two vampire hunters, but like there was a whole thing about like there's vampires in Highgate or something, and I haven't listened to all of it, but yeah, I was listening to that today while I was driving.
That's interesting. So there's an episode of the show Houdini and Doyle that Bram Stoker is a character in one of the episodes, and it's all about vampires in Highgate.
Hmm.
Huh.
Something's going on at Highgate, y'all.
Good.
So we got to go to Highgate?
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing. That is what I'm hearing.
I guess we're going to have to do an episode from Highgate Cemetery.
Oh, drats.
So back to this book, though, you guys, because I have to tell you.
Yeah.
Okay. So John Polidori, vampire. Elizabeth, victim. After he bites Elizabeth, it serves as an explanation for her sickness and death. And it's also an explanation of why Rossetti gave permission to exhume Elizabeth's body and the description of her body not being decomposed at all.
Yeah. When you were talking about that, I was like, vampire.
Yeah, I know. It's very vampire. So Neil Gaiman actually also featured Elizabeth in his short comic, How They Met Themselves. This looks really good as well. It features Elizabeth Rossetti and one other character that I cannot remember. But they meet this like androgynous character on a train called Divine, and it's the cousin of Sandman. If you guys
are Mr. Sandman, give me a dream. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that looks really good too. You guys should check it out. As far as scholarly books to check out, there's not that many. You can definitely find them if you Google your way through. They do look very good. However, I would actually recommend checking out collections of her own writing. There are several collections of her writing out there. It does seem that we only have 14 or 15 collected poems, though. The rest we kind of have as fragments, kind of like Sappho. I do think there's sort of this kind of renewing interest in her as an artist and writer herself emerging a little bit. So I'm hoping that leads us to more of her work and more about her life before being Walter's model and stuff like that. And I'd be very interested to know if she had a diary.
Yeah.
Because I want to know more about her inner life and kind of the things that she's not telling anyone but maybe writing down. I think you can see some of it in her poetry if you really look at it. You know, but like anything, like a diary of anyone, I feel like it's more personal for them.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to know if we ever find something like that. But that's Elizabeth Siddall. Y'all have any comments or?
That was a good episode. I feel like definitely someone we don't hear about at all.
Yeah.
So that's
which nice. Is interesting because we see her so much.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of like, after I was thinking about this for a little bit, it seems like I feel like we always have these people that like somehow their legacy becomes their life as well. Like she's seen a lot, but no one's really hearing her.
Oh, like yeah. Stanley Tucci.
Wow. What?
You know, like Stanley Tucci's one of those guys, like he's in like a million bajillion movies, but you're just like, I don't know that person's name. Or like, I've seen them in this movie, in this movie, in this movie. I just don't know who they are.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. That was a good, yeah. That was a good pull.
Thanks.
But I mean, I think we kind of talked about it with Sappho too, right? Like her life is fragmented, as is her work, and what we know of her is fragmented.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we've had other people that we've talked about that they kind of have this similar thing where like their legacy kind of sort of becomes this representation of how their life turned out actually. I think that's really interesting. And I'm not sure how to really sum up this episode of like, what do we take from Elizabeth?
You know, don't get addicted to opioids.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good general rule, I think.
Take chances. I know we don't like to say.
But I mean, I guess kind of, yeah, because like her whole life turned around when she took the chance to show someone her work. Which like, also, I didn't get to talk about this, but she shows this man her work and her sketches and art. And he's like, I think you should be a model. And that pisses me off. And I don't know what kind of sway Walter's dad had in the art world. Or why she was showing it to him in the first place.
I don't know.
But like, what a dude thing to do.
Yep.
You know? I don't know. I'd be interested to know what you guys think if you look at her art at all in the next week or so.
Yeah.
But that's all I have.
Cool, cool.
I hope y'all liked it.
I did like it.
That was a good episode. It feels like a cross between like Sappho and Mary Shelley.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, and yeah. I came on board with that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, this is our last episode before, or I guess this is coming out after Christmas.
Yeah, it comes out on my birthday, y'all.
Merry Christmas and happy birthday to Sally.
Woo!
Yeah.
What are you guys' Christmas plans?
I'm staying at my parents' house, and then my brother and his girlfriend and her parents are coming over, and we're going to eat and drink.
Yeah.
And open presents. So, yeah.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
And I, right now, I'm visiting extended family. And then, actually, like, after Christmas, I'm going to see, like, my dad, my sister, and all that. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That'll be nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
What am I doing? Do I work? No, I don't. I do have Monday through Christmas off. And I think I'm going over to my parents on Christmas Eve and spending the night.
Are you bringing the girls with you?
I will be. And there, Gilda's going to see her girlfriend, Mocha.
Yeah.
And then...
Is Rosie going to see Charlie?
I don't think Charlie's going to be coming over because there's going to already be four dogs.
Aww.
So Rosie won't see her boyfriend?
Rosie will not see her boyfriend because Gilda's girlfriend is already nervous. But, yeah.
Well, you should just, that's why you should just hold Mocha.
I mean, I would if she would let me, but she literally would not let you. She's very.
You haven't seen me around that puppy.
She's very rigid. but yeah, and then Aaron and Katie, my brother and his wife are coming over, and Gina, who's Katie's mom, will be joining us. And it'll be very lovely and very nice to see all of them again.
Are y'all going to make peanut butter balls?
I've requested them. I'll let you know in the next episode if my mom has made me peanut butter balls or not. Honestly, with working, 13 out of the last 14 days. She better have. Well, I guess we should do our outro. Who's going to do it?
Why don't you try it? Sally and I have done it.
I literally don't know if I know it. I'll give it a shot. Sure. thank you all so much for listening. What's first, the ratings?
Do whatever you want to do. Do however you want to do it.
We're available on several platforms, including Apple, iTunes, and Spotify, and some others that I can't remember right now. And if you listen to us on a platform that has a rating system and you want to give us a rating, that would be great. We're still fairly
Give us a review, too.
What?
Give us a review, too.
Oh, and a review. Yes, absolutely. We're still fairly new at this thing, and any feedback is greatly appreciated. Even if you tell us that, or tell me that I sound like hot garbage, that's fine. It's constructive criticism. but if you like us and want to help us make the podcast better, you can go to anchor.fm/legendarylaugh and click on support this podcast, and you can give us money. And that money,
It would make a great Christmas/birthday present.
Yeah, don't you want to give Sally a birthday present? If you don't, what kind of a monster are you?
You know what I'm doing on my birthday? I'm going to work.
You know what we could be doing 5 years from now? Not making Sally work on her birthday and recording a podcast instead.
Yeah.
So help us make that dream come true. But that money would go to books and equipment and just overall making the podcast a better product for you guys. If you would like to just email us for topic suggestions or person suggestions or weigh in on our current food debate, which is cake versus pie, waffles versus pancakes. And you had something else that was the same thing.
Oh, it was pie versus cobbler. Or cake versus cobbler.
Always cake. Anyway, you can email us at legendarylasses@gmail.com. Maybe you can tell me that I'm wrong on that. I mean, I'm not, but maybe you could tell me that I am.
Because you are wrong, Ashley.
Well,
but you know what? You do agree that waffles are better than pancakes, and I that kind of makes up for it.
Okay, good, 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 good. We also have a website that you can visit us at. We post some different stuff that we mention in each episode on our website. You can visit us at legendarylasses.wordpress.com.
Our socials.
Oh, yeah. You can follow us on all of the social media shenanigans. We're at Legendary Lasses on all of them.
You should also go to my Twitter, Salamona Rose, and wish me happy birthday and follow me.
Hey, yeah. Give me praise. Go wish Sally a happy birthday.
And then you should follow Ashley and KB. I don't know their handles on the top of my head, but give them praise too. Or just say, what's up?
My Twitter is at much ado about Ash, ASH.
I don't even know what my handle is.
It's on our page. It's on our page.
I'm 90% sure KB's Twitter handle is at KB_THOM.
It's either an underscore or a dot, one of the two. But yes,
we need to get this.
I'm 90% sure it's an underscore, but yeah.
Yep.
So thanks again for listening. Now go out, make waves, change history, and stay legendary,
and kick some ass,
and don't take opiate stuff,
and take chances.
I take chances, but don't take opiates.
Yeah.
I think that's a good message.
Hey, it's a lovely message.
All right. Well, I've got to eat before I go into complete delirium. So bye.
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 Bye. I love you.
Bye.
Bye, Sally. Hey,
bye. Happy birthday, Sally.
Thanks, Ashley.
Bye.
Bye. We should all get tattoos. Bye.
Okay, bye.